I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody, welcome on to another edition of Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone of The Zone Sports Network. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Scott, you look like your head's somewhere else.
No, my head's not somewhere. My head's on the top of
no.
my neck. It's where it is every day. It's right on top of my body.
Scott's thinking about Las Vegas.
Well, yeah, I am.
He's thinking about you got to make the trip down. Hans is already down there. I think PK's already on the way down there.
Oh, great.
I'm just saying, and Scott's got to do the show, and then he goes down after. But I'm just trying to figure out if this is like your pregame.
Before pregame. That was the golden rule. Don't mess on game day. Like the world could be ending, and it's like, just don't even mess with
it. Okay, so you're thinking about Las Vegas. You're thinking about this game with Utah and Oregon, and of course we're going to be breaking it down a ton. Tomorrow the station is going to be massive on top of this whole thing. You don't want to miss anything on the Zone Sports Network tomorrow because just all day, all the way up until kickoff of that game, and then even in the post game, we're going to be taking care of you. So we've got all the stuff figured out. We've got our people down there. Of course, Scott's going to be headed down. I'll hold down the fort here tomorrow. And then the whole thing is basically we toggled between talking about what you're going to do, what it's going to look like going down to Las Vegas, you guys going down, doing the game, and then coming back, blah, blah, blah. But then we really got into some good stuff in the pre-show meetings today when we started wondering what we're going to be doing in Los Angeles. It's bad juju, isn't it? Start talking already about the things. Is it bad to start planning about things we want to do in Pasadena?
No.
Where we're going to broadcast the show from.
Have you ever heard of vision boards? Have you ever, where you put them up in your room
goals?
And you take pictures?
Yeah.
And you set goals for yourself?
Oh, is that what? So the show goal is to be like, we want to make it to the Rose Bowl. We're just like the team. We want to make it to the Rose Bowl this year.
There are some things that I've done, and I'm not going to tell you about them. Until
what does that
after,
mean?
Well, because I'm not going to tell
you.
About
mean, oh, you mean like in preparation?
Yes.
You're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Long time ago. Long time ago.
So you've been making some, you've already got an Airbnb figured out.
It's because of me that they're there right now. You know how the fan thing works.
Should we do a celebrity tour? You know the ones where they show you where they live? Should we do one of those?
You know,
I've been to Los Angeles. You and I personally have been to Los Angeles a lot of times together, but we've
actually
never done it.
I know. And that is one thing I want to do.
No, it's not.
I totally do.
We would be on one of those buses where The Rock rolls up, you know?
I don't.
And he goes, hey, you guys, welcome to Los Angeles. And we're like, there's The Rock. You and me taking pictures.
You'd think he'd really do that.
He does it. And he posts the videos of him doing it. It's really funny because I'm like, why does this guy feel the need to like drive up to these tour buses and make himself known?
There's this unknown like third wall. Right? Between famous people and normal people. And we're all just the same people. But for some reason,
you got to keep that facade up.
They think that they're different, you know?
Well, we're toggling between planning for Las Vegas, of course, and the Utah-Oregon game tomorrow, the Pac-12 championship.
Wait, can I tell you a story?
Absolutely.
Because
this is what I live for.
This just came to me talking about like the third wall.
Yeah.
I lived in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah.
And I lived on a lake. But the lake was connected to a bunch of other lakes through canals.
Okay.
And it was a little bit of a who's who in the sports world lived on all of these canals.
That big old Shaq.
So Shaquille O'Neal and Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
Grant Hill, Tiger Woods.
Is this Windermere? Is that what we call it?
Wesley Snipes.
Oh.
Barry Larkin. Baseball
I love
player.
How you threw Wesley Snipes in there. Just is it because of his of Major League? Is that why?
Yeah.
Famous athlete Wesley Snipes.
Well, no, he was neighbors with Tiger Woods. They're next door neighbors.
That's hilarious.
So people would come visit,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. You mean they drive through the neighborhood?
No. They would come to my house.
Oh, like I'd okay.
You'd have company, and what do you do? It's to entertain the folks. You go on your celebrity tour. So in Los Angeles, you go on a bus.
Right.
In Orlando, you get on my boat.
But you're already in the gated community. You're already on the lake.
So I'm driving through these neighborhoods, right?
Yeah.
On the boat. And I go, there's Tiger's house. He was outside eating on his patio. And it was like we had gone on a safari.
Because people started taking pictures.
And it's like, no, he's out there. He's really, like, it's him. He's, like, right there. Like, because normally you just see the house. You
guys are waving from the boat?
No one, yeah.
This is not good form, Scott.
Well,
no,
we were kind of a little subtle, you know, about some of us were. Some people were, it's really him.
So that's what you want us to do down in LA?
But when you go on a safari, it's like, what do you want to, see, like,
yeah,
you want to see
the
lion
animals
eating
are in
something.
Action.
Right.
Yeah.
And well, Tiger was out, right?
You want to see the lion eating something. You want to see the tiger eating
exactly.
Something. It's terrible.
And I said to everyone.
I can't believe you were that guy.
Like, we can't go on the tour in the middle of the day because, you know, people eat in the morning or at night, right? So we got to go in the evening.
You're trying to do like the Disney Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, no, it's a lot like that.
No, I know, but like you bring out the animatronic tiger. Oh, look, there he is. Yeah. He like pops out of the water. He's hitting a golf ball like those Showbiz Pizza like mechanical birthday band. You know,
that's
you guys on the tour. We've got so much to cover today. We're gonna start the show off as we always do. Let's just jump right in here. It's the cut at the top of the program.
There we go. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right, here's the deal. First story of the day.
Do you know who Thurman Thomas is?
Of course I do. Lost his helmet at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, he was my neighbor.
He was?
Yeah.
Thurman Thomas used to come over?
Yeah.
You guys partied, huh?
Our whole neighborhood was like that. Like there was a, it was an open door policy.
Do I know who Thurman Thomas is?
You may or may not know who he is.
He's the second best running back in the history of Oklahoma State football.
What's so fascinating about that is he's older than Barry Sanders.
Yeah.
Barry Sanders was like the guy who carried the water cooler.
Right. He was like a freshman when Thurman was a junior.
And Thurman Thomas, everyone was like, man, he is the guy.
Yeah.
And they've done an interview about that time in their life. It's so funny because Barry Sanders is just...
Thurman Thomas broke all the records. Yeah. He was insane to watch. And to have it followed up by Barry Sanders is like the worst luck.
You're the coach who recruits these guys. You got to feel pretty
you
good about
be
it. I got Barry Sanders and Thurman Thomas to come to Oklahoma State.
Well, but not only that, you recruited two guys who were both 5'9", 5'8", 5'9". And they were 160 pounds, and you're hoping it's going to work out. And they ended up being – is Thurman Thomas – is he a Hall of Famer in the NFL?
Thurman Thomas?
Yeah, he's got to be, right?
Oh,
he's got the gold jacket.
Thurman Thomas is amazing.
He was
– Now, I would tell you this. If I had to pick between the two
– Oh, don't do it.
I'd take Thurman Thomas.
Because he's a good back. He
caught the ball out of the backfield. He's a complete back. I mean, he was – Barry, look –
Should we call Barry Sanders up and tell him what you said just now about how you'd rather play with Thurman Thomas than Barry Sanders?
If you talk to people in the NFL, they'll tell you that – they'll say that same. If people are being honest, if they're trying to be politically
correct
–
is this you rolling out that Barry Sanders is overrated?
No. Okay. Barry Sanders, as a runner, no one even comes close.
Right.
If you want to see something spectacular – he does things Thurman Thomas could never do.
Yeah.
He does things Emmitt Smith could never do.
For sure.
But both of those guys, they do a lot of other things Barry Sanders could never do. And those are the types of things that you really want out of a running back on an every down basis. Barry was just like, man, is he gonna hit a home run today? I mean, that's why you go to the game with Barry Sanders.
Yeah.
You don't even care if the Lions win. You just want to see Barry do something.
You
want
to see, like, it always looked
and
like
he
his,
would.
It always looked like his hips were dislocated. And he was dislocating other people's hips. As
to me,
to
his thighs were so big, it almost felt like it got in his way of running. But it was part of what made him so amazing.
That the center of gravity, right? Everybody always talks about
it. I mean, if my hips were and thighs were that thick, man, I don't know.
Speaking of hips and thighs, let's talk about the College Football Playoff Committee. That's a
that's a great segue right there.
I'm just assuming there was probably some catered in, some nice. Yeah.
You're thinking of like chicken parts.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah. They probably catered in some nice barbecued chicken, brought it in and to the Grand Hyatt at the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, which is where they all met, and they didn't come up with anything for the College Football Playoff. I don't know what we expected them to come up with necessarily. I don't think they're going to. I don't know if they're waiting to really roll it out until they go, let's just, because they're going to meet again in January. But they didn't come up with anything of any sort of news necessarily, except for that they, because it came out in June that they were thinking about expanding it, that the number 12 of 12 teams was something that they were kind of leaning toward. You know, things changed a little bit, though, when some of these conferences started to – when the Big 12 kind of changed up, when Texas and Oklahoma moved over to the SEC, and so things are kind of being rediscussed again. But they're still talking about an expanded college football playoff. They've got to figure something out, or the current system of four teams of Alabama, Georgia, probably Oklahoma again at some point.
Ohio
I don't think Clemson,
State.
Ohio State, all these teams – that's going to be the likelihood of the future unless they get something
USC's
done in January.
USC's going to be in the future.
Oh, boy.
Here's what I think probably is the main reason. I mean, what you talked about where these conferences shuffling around, I'm not sure that that's ended yet. I'm not sure that these conferences aren't going to go to like kind of a super conference by the – you know, and have – and maybe there's five super conferences. I don't know.
Sure.
I think it has to do with this year's playoffs, actually. I think that Cincinnati and the fact that Cincinnati is in right now today, and there's only one more. I mean, it's this weekend. There's one more, you know, and if they win, then they should be in. But it's how they do when they get in there, right? Because if they go – if Cincinnati goes in and does well in the playoffs, and does well means that they don't get blown out. They don't even have to win. They just have to do well. If they do well, then I think there's a valid point, and everyone goes, see, look at this. There are teams out there that, given the chance, given the opportunity, could make something happen in the college football playoffs. If Cincinnati gets blown out, if Cincinnati is like a no-show, if Cincinnati plays like Notre Dame plays when they get in the college football playoffs, then I think there's less of a – I think it'll happen anyways – but I think there's less of a chance that they actually expand the playoffs. Everyone wants to be in. Like there are just some conferences right now that are going to get left out. I mean, right now, who's left out? Pac-12? Big 12?
Right.
I mean, two of the Power Five conferences are left out of the college football playoffs. And you could argue Oklahoma State is like right there. And you could say, well, then you're gonna put in Notre Dame.
It's super lame because the normal quote unquote powers that be, because Oklahoma State is not in that discussion usually. You just kind of dismiss the fact that the Cowboys are probably just as good honestly, they're just as good as those other four teams. Like at least their defense, I think people look at that and go, man. But you don't necessarily see them in there, and so you're okay to give Michigan a pass because they're a blue chip program. But Oklahoma State doesn't get the same type of recognition. And right now, you've got Cincinnati who's in that college football playoff. I'm sure that these guys look and go, this is not fun. This isn't a good look for us. We got to figure out a way to make these four teams be the most interesting four teams. And so expanding it is going to have to be the future. But I don't know if that's going to necessarily solve some of the issues. They're trying to figure out if they're going to play the first round on campus at some of these places to host these games. I know you and I both talked about being partial to having those bowl games that we don't like be a part of the expanded playoff.
See, I like the bowl games. Because,
then they mean more, right?
Well, yeah, but it's also part of college football. I mean, going to a bowl game is meaningful. And most of the bowl games are in a place that you want to go.
Yeah, but
I don't want to go to Ann Arbor, Michigan in late January. I mean, that'd be terrible.
But does that mean that you have teams playing in two bowl games? two, three bowl games because they're going to be in that first round.
I mean, I think you have to do it just to keep the bowls and those traditions a part of it. And I think it actually, reinvigorates the bowl games. I mean, the bowl games I've gone to where Utah's been a participant, not really that exciting.
What do you mean? The Sugar Bowl in 2004? Well, you're talking about when you're calling the games.
About recently.
Yeah.
Like the Holiday Bowl, going to what was, I don't know, Jack Murphy, Qualcomm, whatever stadium it was, San Diego County Credit Union.
Did they already tear it down?
Yeah.
It got condemned or whatever, didn't it?
No, it's gone.
Okay.
But the bowls are just kind of there. I think bowls have kind of lost some of their luster in general.
Some?
And this would be just a way to actually reinvigorate. But I want to go back to your Oklahoma State, because here's the deal with Oklahoma State. And I think this is the deal with a lot of programs in the country. We live in an age of like mass information. Like you can get educated on a lot of things. My son never took piano lessons, and he can play the piano beautifully, masterfully. He just got on the internet and started doing it. It's just unbelievable how he's done this. But you have all these kids, and they go, I want to be a really good football player, and John Beck, who's supposedly the guru guy, right? Well, all these guys are going to John Beck, and how did they find out about John Beck? And 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, not all these guys are going. So these players that are in high school, and they're getting access, they're getting exposure to training and to knowledge and to understanding about football that they never had an opportunity in the past. And my point about this is that now places like Oklahoma State or maybe even BYU, because BYU had an amazing year this year, and I always felt like, well, you know, they're kind of stuck because, you know, the recruiting limitations, but they've been able to produce some amazing players. Kyle Whittingham at Utah, and how they've developed players there, and a lot of these players they get, you know, they have a pretty good foundation of football. And so what does that mean? Well, what it means is that these traditional blue blood schools, guess what? They don't have a monopoly on really good football and football players. I know a high percentage of players go to the NFL from the SEC, but there's a lot of football players that aren't from the SEC that go and do very well.
So the conference commissioners have gotten together, and they didn't actually decide on anything as of yesterday. They do know they want to expand, and I think that that's the good news for everybody. I think just working out whatever the details are going to be on how they expand, who's going to get in versus who's going to get buys in the first round, et cetera, fine. That being said, Andrea Adelson from ESPN has tweeted out and has confirmed, ESPN has confirmed that Bronco Mendenhall will be stepping down as Virginia's head coach at the end of this year.
Oh, my goodness. It was the BYU loss that just kind of put him over the edge. Sure. That's what happened.
What is going on there?
That's weird.
Virginia coach Bronco Mendenhall stepping down after the bowl game. So there's going to be a Zoom meeting on this whole thing. We're finding this out as everybody else is.
Maybe he's going to go coach at Notre Dame.
Hey, now, wouldn't that be something? There's no way. There's no way Bronco Mendenhall would go coach at Notre Dame. There's no way they would ask him. Am I being crazy? Maybe it is. No, come on. All right. So there's the that's happening right now. So you're starting to see the reports are coming out. It was confirmed, the press release from it looks like athletics director Carla Williams at Virginia has put a press release out. It says, it's been a privilege to have Bronco Mendenhall direct the Virginia football team over the past six seasons. He's done an exceptional job of not just transforming the program, but elevating expectations for the program. He established necessary foundation to propel our football team forward. He is more than a football coach, and the impact he's had on these young men will be positive influence for the rest of their lives. So there you go. In his own understated way, what does that mean? He's had tremendous impact on our local community with Thursday's Hero program and his encouragement for his players to be proactively involved. He's an amazing coach. He's a great colleague, and the other coaches on this staff have always been willing to help whatever is needed. I've been blessed to have been able to work with him the last few years. I wish he and Holly the very best in their next chapter. That is the athletics director, Carla Williams, discussing Bronco Mendenhall stepping down as Virginia's head coach. What on earth is going on? Is he being
asked? Looking at me like I know.
I'm just wondering if he's being asked to step down. Is that him being let go? Is that them firing him?
Yeah, you don't fire a coach now. Maybe you do. I guess there's still time.
What's
recruiting.
Going on here?
I don't know. You're gonna.
Isn't he probably the best?
Through the bowl game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's going on? That's a Bronco move though. He doesn't want to leave someplace unfinished. He has a pretty. It's the same thing that happened, I guess, when he coached through that Royal Purple.
Maybe he's going
Las
to Fresno
Vegas
State.
Okay, the premier job in the Mountain West, the third or fourth premier job in the Mountain West, the Fresno State Bulldogs.
It's a poor man's Boise State.
What on earth is going on? Why is Bronco Mendenhall not the coach at Virginia anymore? Am I missing something?
And it's not health related.
No, I mean, but it's also a very Bronco Mendenhall thing. Like he kind of does his own thing. Yeah. Are they letting him go though? That's what I'm. It's very much sounds like. It just is. It just doesn't sound like it's necessarily his. It says he's stepping down though.
Right.
So we're finding this out. Bronco Mendenhall no longer going to be the coach of Virginia after the bowl game that they play with the University of Virginia. That's crazy. Would you leave UVA? Leave a Power 5 program? Is there something else in the mix? We're going to take a break. We'll come back. More to go. We'll talk about this and much more right here on 97.5 1280 The Zone Sports Network.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back. It's 97.5 1280 The Zone Sports Network. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell in front of me. Scott, you're heading down at right after the show here, down to the Pac-12 championship game. Going to call that game tomorrow.
I'm curious how many people are going to be driving or are driving now or will drive tomorrow morning.
Oh, we've got a lot of cheapskates in the city of Utah. People are going to drive for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's not that far.
No, I'm not saying that it's cheap
easy,
to drive.
It's
either.
An
what
easy
I'm saying
drive.
Is just... people will drive tomorrow because they don't want to pay for a hotel tonight.
Yeah.
They'll be like, I'll make it tomorrow. What I'll do is I'll plan it to where I just the Google Maps just drives me straight into the Allegiant parking lot.
It's kind of a thing for some people because they go, okay, there's the potential of a Rose Bowl,
right?
So do I save up for the Rose Bowl and miss this, or do I go to this and then? Because if it's not
both,
it's not
Scott?
The Rose. Well, that's what I
why
always
not
think.
Both? Well, I know so many. I know so many people
can't
have been
do
burned.
Both.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Ute fans have been doing it the last couple of years. And they've been burned on it, right? Where they go, well, I'm going to I'm thinking about just saving my money for the Pac-12 championship game for that Rose Bowl, and boy, it didn't work out for them in those Pac-12 championship games. Hopefully, fortunes change. Speaking of fortunes changing, the breaking news, of course, of interest to us here locally is that Bronco Mendenhall is stepping down, apparently resigning that head coaching position at the University of Virginia after the bowl game. Conspicuously absent from the press release from the University of Virginia today was a quote from Bronco himself.
Well, he's going to have a press conference, right?
I don't know. I mean, but it's a very – listen, talk about mysteries wrapped in enigmas.
Bronco Mendenhall.
I know. That's what I'm saying is that this kind of matches up exactly with how things would go with him. He does stuff at his own speed. I'm interested to see if they're letting him go versus – now, and this is the other thing that Brett Murphy is confirming, apparently, and multiple other sources saying that it's not to pursue another gig. So, Oklahoma fans, sorry, Bronco's not going to be your new head coach.
Yeah, they're heartbroken.
Fresno State fans, Bronco's not going to be your new head coach. If you want to make fun of Bronco, this is a guy who, by the way, is the eighth winningest coach right now in the FBS.
I wasn't making fun of him.
No, I'm just saying people out there.
I think Fresno State would be a great spot.
All right. That's the breaking news. We had to get to it. Joining us right now on Unrivaled, he's Jared Mack of DuckTerritory.com of 24/7 Sports. Jared, thanks for being with us. You're the Duck expert. What version of the Oregon Ducks are we going to see at the Pac-12 championship game tomorrow in Vegas?
I just want to say thank you guys for having me.
You bet.
Tomorrow, I'm expecting an Oregon team to look much different than it did just 2 weeks ago in Salt Lake City. I would be pretty shocked if they came out with the same intensity that they did at Rice Eccles Stadium. This is a Mario Cristobal-led team who usually plays their games with a lot of intensity. Utah just came out and pushed them around in that first matchup. Every once in a while during a game, Oregon can, you know, fall asleep seemingly defensively and almost act as if they have forgotten how to play their schemes or whatever the case may be. And in that November 20th matchup, Utah took advantage of that. You know, the two scores right before the half were just prime examples of Oregon thinking that it was halftime. That it's like, okay, well, you know, we're only down 14 to nothing. That's okay. Not a great half, but, and then soon enough, it was 28 to nothing. So I would be shocked if they came out with anything more than 100% intensity going forward. You know, whether that leads to a win, we'll have to see. This is why you play the games, but I expect them to be a different team overall coming out of the gates.
How hard is it if you're Oregon to play on a short week and not have the normal time that you would have to prepare? Plus, the week before you're playing your rival, Oregon State, and so all your attention's there. How big a challenge is it to make adjustments from the last game and actually get prepared and play a team you just played 13 days ago?
Yeah, I think it presents plenty of challenges for Oregon and the coaching staff. On Tuesday, the media, us reporters, we talked to offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead and defensive coordinator Tim DeRuiter. And, you know, they talked about making adjustments, but they both mentioned how they don't anticipate making huge adjustments, like overall, you know, game hauling plans going forward against Utah. Coach DeRuiter specifically said that he talked about how he didn't feel like he prepared his team well enough for that first game against Utah, and that was on him. And they need to go back to making simple adjustments and kind of go back to the basics. But like you're saying, with the short week, it definitely doesn't help Oregon. I can't say that going off of a short week is helpful for any team, honestly. Utah got the full couple days to go forward here against Oregon, with their game last week being on a Friday. And so I anticipate it I don't anticipate it being too much of a burden for Oregon to go forward. I think that they can still make the necessary adjustments in their, you know, their day-to-day practices. They had a couple guys banged up against Oregon State. They should be as healthy as they can be, obviously, you know, glossing over the fact of their season-ending injuries, but it definitely presents some challenges. But I think that this coaching staff has to be up to the challenge to prepare the team for that short week in this upcoming game.
What does Anthony Brown Jr. have to do differently? I mean, obviously, the Utes kind of had him figured out in game one, or at least force him to do the things that he didn't feel comfortable doing, and they made sure that he wasn't going to hurt him on the ground. And so what does he do differently this game that'll cause the Utes problems down at this Pac-12 championship game?
Well, what he has to do differently, I think, is kind of up to the football gods, and that's staying healthy. Against Utah, he got rolled up on in the second quarter on a rollout, and he was never the same after. He couldn't run the ball. The first drive specifically for Oregon in that November 20th matchup, Anthony Brown had two first down rushing plays and, you know, looked spry. But once he got hurt, he couldn't use his legs. So the game plan, you had to take that aspect out of it. And that allowed Utah to really focus their attention on Oregon's running backs and Travis Dye and Byron Cardwell. And with that, it forced Anthony Brown and Oregon's offense into these third down and long situations, which if you've watched Oregon enough this year, you'd understand that Anthony Brown and Oregon don't do well in third down and long situations. Anthony Brown has done a really good job of improving the last 5 to 6 weeks. You know, there was the boos at the Cal game and stuff like that. People wanted to see Ty Thompson get some play. But, you know, Brown's been pretty darn good the last couple of weeks. But Utah is going to, I would imagine they would try to do the same exact thing this week, is forcing Oregon into third down and long and forcing Anthony Brown to beat you with his arm and not his legs. So what Anthony Brown really has to do is establish his ability to run the ball. Because once he establishes his ability to run the ball, that gives Utah three things to think about. It's a first down run with either Dye or Cardwell. It's a first down run with Anthony Brown. And it's a first down pass play or an RPO, a run pass option where Brown can, you know, look like he's handing it off and then turn around and throw something up the middle to Chris Hudson or Devin Williams. So he just has to make the correct reads. And Oregon offensively overall has to execute their plays, especially in the red zone where they came away with 0 points against Utah last time.
Yeah, I think the RPO is one of those enigma things because I'm not sure Utah stopped it last time. I'm not sure Oregon did enough of it because I think it could be an effective thing. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch. Kayvon Thibodeau, I mean, this guy is just man-child. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a beast. And a couple of years ago in the Pac-12 championship, he just destroyed Utah. The 13 days ago was not much of a factor in the game. What's Oregon need to do to get him unleashed and maybe more of a factor?
Well, I think to get him to be more of a factor, it depends what Utah does offensively. The first matchup, they did a really good job of either completely running away from him or getting really quick outs from Cameron Rising to one of his receivers and just making him obsolete. Every once in a while, after doing, you know, running away or quick outs for a long time in the game, they would run right at him, and that would seemingly catch him by surprise. For Oregon, really what they have to do to get Kayvon involved is stop Tavion Thomas and Utah's rushing offense on first and second down. Far too often in that previous matchup, it would be 5 or 6 yard gains on first down, which leaves just, you know, five to four yards on the second two downs. And that's why Utah was able to convert on 11 of 14 third down attempts the first game. If Oregon can stop Tavion Thomas on first down and hold him to 1 to 3 yards, then that could produce some third and long situations where Utah will have to throw. And unless it's a really quick out, like a slant, something like that, that is going to give Kayvon Thibodeau time to apply pressures. He leads the country in pressure rate at 18.7%. That's a couple percentage points higher than Will Anderson at Alabama, who's been just amazing this year as well. But it really starts on first and second down, and really it doesn't even involve Kayvon Thibodeau in getting himself engaged. It involves the rest of that defense, you know, stopping Utah's first and second down offense to give him the time to do something on third down.
Are there any key injuries that the Ducks are dealing with right now that might affect this game tomorrow?
I mean, Oregon has, I would say they probably have 10 guys on the season-ending list, but that's been for a while. So, but in terms of injuries from last week, Oregon is about as healthy as they can be coming into this game. Noah Sewell was hurt in the third quarter against Oregon State and didn't return to the game, but he is, Mark Cristobal said on Monday that he's good to go to play. Right. The same thing with Mike Taylor Wright. Verone McKinley almost was ejected for targeting at the end of the game against Oregon State, but he's still in. In terms of injuries, I think Oregon going for this game specifically is doing as well as they can. Their backup will linebacker Keith Brown is questionable. I think that's the only one. He did not play against Oregon State. But they did return Jackson LeDuc, who suffered a significant leg injury in fall camp, but he's returned the last 2 weeks. He actually, his first snaps of the season were against Utah in that first matchup. So injury-wise, they're doing okay.
He's Jared Mack of DuckTerritory.com of 24/7 Sports, joins us here on Unrivaled. Jared, looking forward to it, and we'll catch you at the game tomorrow. And thanks for being on the program today, buddy.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you again.
All right. There he is, Jared Mack, DuckTerritory.com. Utes and Ducks tomorrow. I just have a hard time thinking that, Oregon just didn't feel like showing up for that game in Salt Lake. That's a little bit of the narrative we're hearing, right? Oh, yeah, they just didn't come out with any fire. That's what happened. That's why they didn't do well against Utah. It's just Utah seemed like they didn't just out-execute them and out-energy them in that game. It was a full-on top-to-bottom deal. And so I just wonder what Oregon's going to do differently. It seems to me, Scott, that just having more energy, coming out more fired up, is not necessarily going to be it for Oregon.
Yeah, and I don't think Utah is going to be not fired up for this game. I think they'll be ready to play. In fact, as I've watched Utah throughout the season, that's the thing that really jumps off the page at me right now. This team doesn't look tired. They're not worn down. They haven't had this war of attrition. Like they've won that war this year. A couple of years ago, playing Washington, Utah was just they were worn down. Playing Oregon a couple of years ago, they were worn down. And that worn down is not just the physical side of it, but it's also the mental side of it. And that's when you see a team like. And if Utah's going to win this game, it's so important to get out early and to kind of establish that, like, we're here to play, and that will play heavy on Oregon's mind from an emotional standpoint. Like, oh, man, we are in for another battle tonight, and we're not sure that we want to show up for it.
The Bronco Mendenhall stepping down as Virginia's head coach has been quite the bit of news that we are hit with this hour. I've got some of the first comments that he's finally made about this whole deal. Everybody's wondering if this is his decision, if this is something that the university made for him. Bronco Mendenhall now out as Virginia's head coach after the coaching of the bowl game that they will be in. But, yeah, not going to be at Virginia any longer. So far, not going anywhere with the coaching jobs, but I'll give you his first reactions next. You want to join us right here. It's 97.5 1280 The Zone Sports Network.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back. It is 97.5 1280 The Zone. The Zone Sports Network, Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell. We're just parsing through some of this info that we're getting here as a Zoom press conference was hastily thrown together for Bronco Mendenhall and his apparent departure from the University of Virginia as their head coach, as it was announced last hour. Just about an hour ago, Bronco Mendenhall was announced that he was going to be resigning as the head football coach of Virginia. He will coach through the bowl game. And then that's going to be it. So, Scott, the reaction that – I mean, I think here's Bronco's first quote that I want to make sure, because they had the press release that the athletics director, Carla Williams, made mention of what the university was thankful for. It made it sound like he had been let go. He said, clearly this week there's been a sense of clarity. I need to step back from college football and reassess my life as well as my wife, as my partner, and next chapter of our life. This was my decision. Bronco Mendenhall also saying this was, quote unquote, not permanent, leaving the door for a return possibly for coaching down the road. Now, my question for you is, when you hear stuff like this, when somebody – I mean, listen, Virginia was – they started off pretty strong. They've had some – I mean, these guys played in the Orange Bowl. They were 6-6 this year. They were 4-4 in their conference. I mean, they'd lost their last four games. Including that loss.
It all happened 49. At BYU.
Well, Brennan Armstrong being out didn't help.
No.
And, you know, the guy was leading college football in every category at the quarterback position until he was hurt in that game against BYU and then was out. But they lost to Virginia Tech at the very end. He said that it did not factor into his decision-making, them losing those last four games. Now, if he'd have won those last four games, would he be changing his mind? Yeah, because things would be a lot different, except for Bronco Mendenhall is one of these guys who is like a – for all the things you can say about Bronco, and I covered Bronco for a long time when he was down at BYU, and, say what you will about Bronco. He's not the funnest guy to interview. He's not the best to work with as a press person. If you're doing media stuff, he's not the most exciting. You're not going to get the greatest sound bites out of him. But I'll tell you what Bronco Mendenhall is. He's kind of his own guy. He does exactly what Bronco Mendenhall wants to do. And so him making this decision and saying, yeah, it's a personal decision, it's a bigger picture decision, as he put it, and that's what he's talking about in his press conference right now. To me, it just seems like a very Bronco Mendenhall thing to do. I just feel bad for his staff because those guys are going to walk away without jobs likely, you know, as they try to figure out who their coach is going to be going forward.
Well, but it's a good time, though, for those coaches. I mean, if he waits a lot longer, if he waits through recruiting, waits through all these things, then it doesn't give anyone an opportunity.
It kind of hoses Virginia.
There's a lot, yeah, and there's a lot of openings. I mean, there's a lot of places for guys to find a job at this point. So that, you know, and that's probably part of what factored into this. It could be a million things.
He said it's personal.
Right. Which, when it's personal, it's a million things.
You kind of just go, okay.
But it probably boils down to one of two things, right? It's either about his relationship with his wife, or it's just about being burned out. But really, it's not anything more than that. And it sounds like when he says, "Hey, I would consider coming back again and coaching again down the road." So it very possibly could just be that, man, he's had enough.
Right. It's maybe there's a
grind to playing and coaching in sports, and I don't think people understand the psychological, the emotional toll it takes on you. Like right now, I'm not even playing in this game. I have no relevance to the Pac-12 champion, other than I'm a fan and I'm an alumni.
But you're in the tank right now.
But I have in pregame form.
I
have that like knot in my stomach. And when you're a coach, and your job's on the line, and you put yourself out there, right? I mean, you go hire these coaches, you go recruit these players, you implement systems, and you pray that these guys are going to understand what you're trying to do and execute it on the field and in front of thousands of people. Most people don't get in an arena with 50, 60,000 people to do their job and right. have everybody watch.
He's got three young kids, too.
Right. And so that it just takes some massive pressure and it takes a toll on you. When you're involved now, when you're involved in it, you don't really recognize it, and then all of a sudden you go, you know, like Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan, and you got that shake in your hand, you know, and you don't know why, but you just have it, and it's a real thing, and sometimes it gets to the point where it's not really manageable, and you need to step away. That's one reason, yeah. or it's a family situation.
Well, and
maybe it is his kids. I don't know.
He's got his three boys, and it's just
it's why I didn't get like I had opportunities to go coach, and I wanted to, and I would have loved to have gone and coached in the NFL. Loved it. I would have gone loved to coach in college. I would love to coach at the University of Utah. I just valued my time with my family so much more. I wanted to be with my kids when they were growing up.
It would have been a tough.
There's no tough life
for them.
Look, in the NFL, you're coaching 365. I mean, you have 1 month off in the summer, right before everything starts, and you're always recruiting, or something as a college coach. I mean, you're babysitting these college athletes a lot of times, so. So you just—it is your family. It becomes your life, and I just personally was like, I'm not willing to do that. I don't want to do that.
He also kind of made mention in this press conference that he sort of implied that the transfer portal and kind of where college football was quote unquote going right now is one of those reasons to step back and reconsider being a college football coach right now.
Why?
I don't know if that meant that
it's
everybody.
It's the coolest thing in the world.
A lot of guys bailing out on him right now, and it just feels like he's at the dark end of the portal right now.
Whereas
some of these guys, it's an exciting time because if you're trending up, you might be getting a bunch of transfers. But if you start to lose a bunch of guys to maybe it is becoming a grind. We've heard a lot of coaches complain about the transfer portal and what it's quote unquote turned college football into. But the reality is it's become more interesting for us. I mean. By far.
Okay, Lincoln Riley benefited massively from the transfer portal at Oklahoma.
And
the
will
University
now.
Of Utah benefited from it. BYU benefited.
Absolutely.
The Nakua brothers and others. And I mean, those are massive. And it's like these players, who cares? I mean, really, would you rather have some player who is disgruntled because he's not playing and have him sitting there and being a distraction or grumping around all the time, or would you rather say, look, it's better that you go. It really is better that you go. I mean, this Peter Castelli who came to Utah early out of high school and still should have been a senior but went through spring football.
Right.
I mean, he's gone already.
Yeah.
And he's gone because he's just not fitting into the plans. And he's like, I want to go somewhere. And good. Really. I mean, it's not like good riddance. It's like, good.
Yeah, Broncos Bennett.
Get that dead weight away from you and then find something new.
Broncos Bennett, Virginia, the last six seasons. And they've enjoyed kind of more success than you see at Virginia almost ever in the last in the latest 6 years. So whether or not he's been effective as a coach there, look, he's an acquired taste, and take that however you want to. I mean, because every person who works with him is probably like, Bronco's kind of a weird dude on a personal level, but I'll tell you what he is he's a proven successful coach.
Because of the transfer portal, then I can't respect that. I just can't.
No, I think it's a lot more. I mean, he's made mention of his family 100 times before that came up. But I think that's probably another one of those things. It's probably a benefit for him because he's a loyalty guy, and I think the transfer portal for him just feels like a place where a lot of guys have been unloyal to him or unloyal to former teams or whatever, and it doesn't sit well with him. All right, we'll take a break right here. We'll come back. Mitch Harper from KSLSports.com, our BYU insider, host of Cougar Sports Saturday, is going to join us right here on 97.5 1280 The Zone, the Zone Sports Network. Stay with us. All right, everybody, welcome back. It is Unrivaled right here on 97.5 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. I'm Alex Keery. He's former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell. A couple irons in the fire here, Scott. Pac-12 championship game, of course, tomorrow. You're going to have all day coverage right here on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Scott's going to be down calling the game. I know the PK's going to be down in Vegas. I know Hans is already there. And we're going to have you there as kind of a trifecta of all of our Zone Sports Network folks there. Scotty G's down at the Mountain West Conference championship game this weekend, of course, with Utah State. It's a big weekend in sports. Bronco Mendenhall has just announced his resignation from the University of Virginia, or the school announced it, rather, and then he had his press conference. It is a really confusing thing as to why he's stepping away exactly, or he said it was his decision, but also made mention that he was not – that his players found out basically kind of around the same time that he did about the actual announcement. So I'm really confused about how this thing is going down. I'm sure that somebody who can give us a little bit more clarity and maybe help us understand it just a little bit more, our BYU insider for KSLSports.com, Mitch Harper, joins us on the program. What's going on, Mitch?
Yeah, guys. Wow, quite the interesting turn of events with Bronco Mendenhall. And to honestly give you the timeline, Bronco just, you know, as you said, addressed the media. He said he informed his coaches. He informed his coaches at 4:45 Eastern, 2:45 Mountain Time, and then at 3:00 Mountain Time, he told his team, and then 3:15, it was official with Virginia Sports. So basically, his staff found out pretty much like all of us, just very sudden and abrupt. Bronco said that he started contemplating this move on Sunday. And each and every day this past week, he's been contemplating, as he said, with an action plan. And he ultimately came to this decision to move on from coaching. He's been doing it for 31 years, and 12 of those or 13 of those were at BYU. So quite the career in football.
Well, I got to ask you something, and I know you're going to be shocked by this, but it's BYU's women's soccer. Well, what's going on there?
What are you talking about, Scott? This is not something that you have ever brought up.
I know. I want to be different today.
Oh, my heavens.
I want to see. I want to see what kind of insider Mitch Harper really is here.
Well, yeah. I mean, BYU women's soccer—they're going to be in their first College Cup ever. It's the version of the Final Four they're going to be playing in Santa Clara, and they got two of the top players in the nation, Michaela Coulihan and Cameron Tucker. So. He's got a good shot. They're going to face a WCC team in Santa Clara on their home field. So should be a good match and a chance to get to the national title. I'm very stunned, Scott, that you shifted gears on us and went to an Olympic sport. This is shocking. Honestly.
What do you want me to say? Tell me about BYU losing to UVU last night.
I could ask you that question.
Probably be more Bronco.
I was still interested in Bronco for heaven's sake.
That's old news already.
Oh, it's my heavens.
All right, let me ask you a question about Bronco, because this is my Bronco question to you. Why do you think he's doing this?
I think he's done with the world of college football. I think that, you know, he in his press conference, it's still going right now on Zoom. He noted a stat that he texted over to his coaching staff about the transfer portal, and he said he texted staff yesterday, I believe is what he said, 240 players have entered the transfer portal over the last 4 days. I think this era of transfer portal and guys that are year-by-year deals, they're no longer program guys, I think that doesn't sit well with Bronco. And I remember back when Bronco was at BYU, he always said that he viewed coaching as a platform to teach, and he viewed it as a teaching profession. He was never into big money college football, and he always even aired some concerns about it, back then at BYU. And he ultimately said that this wasn't the ultimate thing, but I do believe that was a factor when he's seeing coaches making $10 million a year and athletes that are primarily, minorities not making anything, and they're leaving year by year. I don't think Bronco Mendenhall is about that, and he doesn't want to be part of that college football, in my opinion. And I think him expressing that stat about the transfer portal the last 4 days, I think kind of sheds light into he doesn't like the direction of college football, where it's going.
Not just that, like, he's a massive loyalty guy, too. I mean, like, that's something that he's always been – if guys left the program early to go to the NFL, he felt spurned. You know, even if it was a better move for them financially. I remember when Austin Colley left, it was like it was a personal affront to him, even though it was obviously the best move for Austin Colley to make at that moment in his career.
He didn't recruit players to BYU to go to the NFL. That's not why they were there.
They had a higher calling, right?
And I honestly wonder, too, guys, and this is kind of more speculation on my end on this side of things, but I also wonder what dynamic his staff played in this, and maybe his bosses at Virginia, if they asked him, hey, you need to make changes to your defensive staff potentially. Again, that's kind of speculation on my end, because that defense that Nick Howell was overseeing was not good. I mean, that was shocking to see a defense that was in a Bronco Mendenhall program that played against BYU to give up 66 points. I was stunned. And they were one of the worst defenses in the ACC this year. They had a great offense, but their defense was at the bottom. I have to wonder, too, if, Bronco wasn't willing to make any staff changes, because he said that week of the BYU game and also today in his press conference that he was coaching with his best friends. And the thing is that now with this decision that he's made to suddenly tell them he's stepping down, he's now put their careers in the hands of a future head coach. So it's very surprising. And I think that was he willing to – not willing to make any changes to his best friends that made the decision to go cross country from Provo to Charlottesville. It's an interesting dynamic. And, I think it's very surprising what the latest shocking domino in the college football coaching carousel.
Well, and with Bronco leaving Virginia, I mean, he brought up his wife, Holly, and his kids and his family and kind of reassesses his life and kind of his relationship with his family and everything. And, that's great. But at the same time, but then he also opened the door to, well, it's not permanent. This is not permanent. And does that mean, do you ever imagine, though? I mean, the transfer portal stuff, if it irks him now, it's going to be a real problem for him in the future. So does he come back ever as a head coach in the FBS, or is it the kind of thing where he goes, I'll just be a defensive coordinator and I'll let the head coach deal with all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, he'd be a great defensive coordinator somewhere, and I mean, he'd be great at a place like BYU eventually. I mean, I think, Bronco is a brilliant defensive mind, but I get the sense that he's kind of done with coaching. Just hearing him talk, and it seems like, he wants to be a teacher and have an impact on people's lives in a greater purpose. He even said in his press conference that his wife, Holly, has a rule that they don't talk about football at home, which is kind of just interesting. Like, I mean, how does football not come up? But, that's what he said. And I just think that I would not be surprised if we never see him on a sideline again and he moves on completely.
It's wild stuff, man.
That's beyond wild. So can we talk about UVU and BYU basketball now?
Or, we can, Scott. Let's do that.
I mean, does that kind of surprise you? I mean, is maybe this UVU team a pretty good team? I mean,
yeah, it was complete shock. I mean, it was the worst performance in the Mark Pope era at BYU. I mean, there was a game a couple years ago against Boise where they struggled, they lost, but I mean, really, Mark Pope teams have always played pretty well, and the only time that they lose is to teams that are either top 25 or top 50 teams. To lose to UVU, a team that was filled with guys that basically left your program because really they were at the end of the bench, and then they beat you, a couple of those guys in the starting lineup, that was shocking. And BYU was dealing with an illness, and they had that significant injury to Gavin Baxter. I really think when Baxter went down, BYU suddenly had a deer in the headlights look, and they were just shocked emotionally to see their teammate who had gone through a long road to get back to the court last year right. after suffering a right knee to ACL injury, now to his left knee. I think it shook him. But I think UVU is a good team. AMAC, Fardaz AMAC, the center for UVU, is one of the best bigs I think BYU is going to face this year next to Drew Timmy from Gonzaga. But, you know, this is the type of loss where if BYU's leadership from guys like Alex Barcelo don't step up, this could turn into, because of the difficulty of the non-conference schedule, they can lose a few more games. And they've got to have Caleb Lohner find his shot offensively. Right. This guy continues to be non-existent on the offensive end. BYU's going to lose a few more games.
One of the things that happened last night, too, is you saw, I mean, Mark Pope after the game, when he brought up Gavin Baxter's torn ACL in the left leg, he was just, I mean, it was almost disbelief. He said it just as a matter of fact statement, but he was obviously, he loves these kids. And so when that happens, it's devastating there. But so BYU suddenly goes from the number 12 team in the country to somebody you look at and you go, man, the WCC is a really difficult conference, considering if you're going to have a setback where the team's going to get shook by some injury, by the injury bug, and maybe not have some of these guys step up who they thought, this is going to be a really tough year for them if they don't figure it out in the WCC as well, not just the non-conference games.
Yeah, no doubt, because the WCC has proved to be pretty good so far this year. And yeah, it's going to be difficult because their front court, it's now young. It's Fusini Traore and Atiki Aliotiki. And I know the coaches on this, in the program in general, is bullish on the prospects of those players and what they can become, but it's now kind of baptism by fire where they're thrusted into the spotlight far sooner than they ever expected coming into this season, their first year at BYU. But those are going to be some of the key front court guys. But the real important piece, because teams are zeroing in on Alex Barcelo, bringing double teams, triple teams even, because Caleb Lohner's offense, it's got to step up. You don't want to put it on one guy completely, but Lohner's the best NBA prospect in BYU's program, even more than Alex Barcelo. Barcelo's kind of a fringe guy. Maybe he could be in a best case scenario, a two-way contract guy. Lohner's a bona fide pro if he can knock down threes and find his rhythm on the offensive end. He's got to come up big going forward for BYU. And his offensive game, he's just lacking right now. And it's kind of a similar path that he had last year, where he started out 0-for-12, and then he became 50% from the three-point line in conference play. He's got to have that type of turnaround again if BYU wants to bounce back from that shocking loss last night to UVU.
All right, we got the fun stuff out of the way. We got soccer, we got basketball losses.
Scott said he was going to shock me today with a question, and that was it. You did it.
Look, Tara Warner, she's a Red Devil. She's my daughter's friend. She plays on the women's soccer team.
I got you.
All right, BYU football. Is there any chance of a New Year's Six game for BYU? And I'll even throw a second question in there. Because I'm feeling good today.
Look at you.
Going to get the boom prices here. your take on where BYU football, like just the season in general.
Yeah, I think as far as with the New Year's Six, I don't expect there's any chance, because the cutoff seems to be that top 11, and Michigan State being one spot in front of BYU, having a better win than BYU's had this year with taking down Michigan. BYU's not going to suddenly jump Michigan State on a bye week, and Sparty's on a bye week as well, too. So BYU, it's highly unlikely, unless somehow the committee says BYU is going to be a bigger draw at the Fiesta Bowl, which they would be. I think they'd even be a bigger draw maybe at the Peach Bowl, because they had 10,000 fans at Georgia Southern. They'd probably bring 35,000 to the Peach Bowl, but still, they're not going to do that to a Big Ten team that took down Michigan, who's going to be in the playoff most likely. Michigan State's going to get into the New Year's Six and not BYU. So Penn State not beating Michigan State last week really is going to send BYU to the Independence Bowl. People have talked about maybe the guaranteed rate bowl in Arizona, and there is that clause that BYU could go there. But keep in mind, with the Independence Bowl, they were supposed to have BYU for 3 years over the next five seasons. They're only going to get BYU once now, because the Cougars are going to go to the Big 12 Conference. BYU is all about relationships. They're not going to do anything to fracture relationships. And honestly, ESPN is not just simply worried about BYU. Come home has said this many times over the years. BYU is not the only entity that they juggle around in the bowl season. So right. BYU is not the top priority. So BYU is going to likely slide into the Independence Bowl. I think you just got to hope and pray that maybe they can juggle some things together and get maybe an LSU like's been tossed around. But that sounds unlikely as well. But as far as the success of this season, I think it's a great year. I mean, 10-2 with this schedule, I think is a phenomenal year for BYU. And I think it's something that sets the table for BYU to be a preseason top 25 team next season. And I think that's got to be the motivation for BYU in a bowl game against probably a Conference USA team is, yeah, the opponent's not going to be great. It's not going to be anything glamorous, but try to win that game to build momentum into 2022 because you get an 11-2 season. We know how this sport works. You return a quarterback, and if Jaren Hall does, in fact, come back, you know, I heard it. You're at his interview with you guys, and, you know, he's leaving that door open to possibly, you know, keeping his options for pro or whatnot. But if he comes back and this BYU offensive line that he adds Kingsley Sulmataya, a five-star transfer, they're going to be a preseason top 25 team, and they got another good schedule as well. So that's got to be the motivation. But this was a heck of a year for BYU for what they did, digging into their depth. It's the best coaching job Kalani Sitake's had during his time with the Cougars.
Pac-12 championship game tomorrow, of course, the Utes and the Ducks on a Friday. But of all the conference championship games though this weekend, what's the most intriguing one for you? Is it just that Georgia Alabama game that everybody's always looking forward to because the SEC is king? What's the game that makes the most impact for you? That's going to be on the Harper household this weekend.
You know, it's kind of I'm going to go with a deep cut. I'm going to stay true to my brand. I'm going to go with the Mountain West.
Wow!
I'm kind of excited to see what Utah State can do because honestly, I think that with Blake Anderson, they could be because you always just assume Boise's going to have that come up again with Andy Avalo. So they got to kind of capitalize now, Utah State does. San Diego State, they're ahead of schedule. Utah State's ahead of schedule. But the Aggies, Blake Anderson and that group, if they could win a Mount West title, that would be quite the story and one of the best stories in college football this year. But I think they have to capitalize because Boise will be back. They're not going to have these dip years like they did this season. So Utah State's got to capitalize where they're in this stage because that doesn't happen very often.
Kind of like Utah needs to capitalize because USC's going to come back.
Yeah. He's on the way back, yeah.
I thought you would pick, like, the Big 12 because Oklahoma State's 5, and if they lose, could they drop behind BYU and BYU slides up to that 11 spot?
Same thing with Baylor, too, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the Big 12 is a good one, too. I think from the standpoint of these are the new, I think, top programs in the league. I think that Oklahoma State and Baylor are going to be the teams to beat for BYU and Cincinnati and Houston when they join the league. These are the class of the league. You know, Oklahoma's gone. Well, Oklahoma State now steps in. And I think Baylor steps in as the premier, maybe Texas brand in the Big 12 conference. So I think from that standpoint, I think a lot of Cougar fans will be excited to see that. I'm sure that the Big 12 offices with Bob Bowlesby are thrilled that Texas and Oklahoma, neither of them are in this game.
Right.
I'm sure the last thing they would have wanted is to present a trophy to one of those teams. But, yeah, it's a good slate of games, too. And I think that, you know, the Big Ten's pretty good, too, with Iowa and Michigan, because if Iowa somehow pulls the upset, what type of chaos does that create? And I also Cincinnati and Houston.
Yeah,
too,
two Big 12 teams, man.
Cincinnati's, I mean, I feel like Houston, they're only a one-loss team. They haven't lost since Labor Day in that opening week against Texas Tech, another Big 12 team. Cincinnati, like, that might be an upset watch. And if you're – I hope that Cincinnati can get it done, though, because I want to see what a Group of Five team could do in that top four. But I think they should be sweating a little bit because that's going to be a tough game.
Mitch Harper, you can read his byline at KSLSports.com. That's where he's our BYU insider, host Cougar Sports Saturday on KSL News Radio on the weekends. Mitch, thanks for hanging out, man. We'll talk to you again.
No problem, guys. Take care.
There you go. Mitch Harper joining us on the Smart Rain guest line.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's Unrivaled. The Zero Smith, of course. Sweet Emotion. They're your house band of the day, brought to you by Live Nation. For all your concert information, tickets, additional artist info, go to livenation.com. Good pick, Scott. Nice job.
Thank you.
Some Steven Tyler. Love it. So many things going on today. My heavens. Bronco stepping down as the head coach of Virginia. That's kind of a weird announcement there that we got during the middle of the show. Dropped in the old lap there.
Very random.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bronco. Random dude, that guy, though. Honestly, I hope that there's not something so, like, going on so badly for him. I hope that, like, you know, that it's really just like a burned out issue. I think you brought that up, right? Where it's like,
right.
Getting burned out is a real thing. At that level,
yeah,
there's certain. I mean, and this is a guy who had relative success there at Virginia. He only won 36 games in six seasons. Goes 36-38, but you have to remember too, he had 10 losses his first season. So he goes 2-10 his first season, but then he was in the Orange Bowl 2 years ago. So he's had more success with Virginia than, you know, most coaches will have there.
One thing about coaches when they kind of get burned out like that is they can come back. You know, Dick Vermeil, like, was kind of one of these high-energy guys, and he gets burned back and out, and then he comes back and takes the Rams to a Super Bowl and wins it. Or like Urban Meyer. Now Urban Meyer is about as random as Bronco is. It's just
You
just know you're not getting the real story there.
See, well, with Bronco, I feel like he is probably burned out.
Right.
Urban Meyer's like spins the wheel of excuses to go, why am I leaving Florida? Yeah. Why am I leaving Ohio State? Oh, yeah, no, I guess it's heart issues. And then he's like, looks around and goes, really? Jeez, that was a tough one. But I guess no one can say anything. There you go. Bronco Mendenhall leaves Virginia today. And, you know, I've actually been bummed out by how BYU fans are funny. Fans in general
are the Suns and Golden State playing again?
Yeah, that's
are they
part
playing
of the deal,
on Friday?
Man. I think they play this week. Yeah,
again.
Let me see here.
Yeah,
it's this week, man.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. They're playing the Suns it's tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday, right? I'm getting all mixed up because the Pac-12 championship game, because it's tomorrow. I get mixed up with it. I did see DJ tweeted out something interesting today, and that was about this very thing where he goes, hey, Pac-12 game on a Friday, and that means you're going to get a lot of eyeballs that everybody else is going to be fighting for on Saturday, where a lot of these conference championship games are going to be played. And somebody pointed out, well, it just shows you the Pac-12. That shows you the Pac-12 is irrelevant when they're playing on a Friday. All the other big conference games are played on a Saturday. And I thought that was an interesting take. I don't think it's correct. I think that the Pac-12, this game's been played on Fridays for quite some time, but I wondered about it too because I thought, oh yeah, I wonder if it is good for the conference to be a Friday game, you know, going into this thing. We certainly will watch it because, you know, we have to. But in the end, is it better for the Pac-12 for that game to be on a Friday? Is it better for them to be able to steal some eyeballs and put themselves on that only day?
I think Las Vegas changes things for the Pac-12 championship. I really do.
Is it a better move?
I think it's a much better move. I was extremely disappointed, especially considering when Utah played Washington, you have two fan bases that really travel well. You really thought there would be a lot of people in the stands that really weren't. It wasn't that exciting of a game. I mean, it really wasn't, or an atmosphere. Hopefully. Now, Utah is close to Las Vegas, so maybe that makes a difference. I don't know. I don't know how much of a difference it should make, but it does.
And what did Witt say? The South is 1-9, 1-10 since they've been in the league against the North?
It's not been pretty.
It's not good at all.
No, it's Stanford, Oregon, Washington, basically, that kind of have dominated it. And then USC is the only other one. But, yeah, the South is not done well.
You just have a feeling this year it's going to be different.
I like that. I don't have an issue with the Pac-12 on a Friday night.
I don't think it's bad.
I'm not. I mean, you when you get bowl games, you know, you get kind of a lineup of bowl games throughout the day, and that's kind of nice. You tend to watch all of those games leading up to what they are. If this was a game that was, you know, let's just say these two teams were playing for a shot at being in the college football playoffs. that would be super exciting. You know, let's just say they both, you know, had, let's say Utah's only loss this year was to Oregon. And let's say Oregon's only loss was to
Ohio State, even
San Diego or Stanford.
Right.
Right. So they're 2 1-loss teams, and that loss would come late in the year, and there's, you know, and here, you know, that's when it doesn't matter if it's Saturday or Friday. I mean, people tune in because of what's on the line for the game. If you're a Utah fan, I think everyone in Utah will watch because they're like, this is the real chance to go to the Rose Bowl. I mean, probably of all the years Utah's been in the Pac-12 championship, I think this is the year. They're just the most complete team they've been. They're explosive running and passing the ball offensively. The defense is really rounding into shape. So yeah, I mean, I think people in Utah watch, but the nation, you know, there'll be sports fans that watch, but it won't be massive.
Should we go to Disneyland while we're down there? Or? Is it again? I'm. Is this poor form? Me asking about planning about Los Angeles
about things
already?
To do. Look, I love Disney.
I'm already looking ahead to Pasadena.
I love Disneyland. I love Disney World. I'll go at anything Disney.
Okay.
Especially
but Scott,
now,
you asked the question.
You understand? Like, you know how?
No,
you know
I
what
know.
Now means? Now means you fit in the rides.
That's, we have
that's
lots
why
of
you,
weight.
And,
feel
and you
good
can
about
walk
it.
Around. That, like,
could you
like,
imagine though? Still, you and I in the teacups would probably send that thing spinning off. If we were in the same teacup,
I've never seen the weight limit on it, but that would be quite a ride.
Be something to watch. There, we're just rolling down. Let me ask you this though. What is there to even – you and I have been to Los Angeles together for work a handful of times. It's always Hollywood, though. But going down to L.A., we'll have more time for the Rose Bowl. We'll be doing the show from down there.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do? That's what I'm saying.
Well,
what should we do,
we're
man?
Certainly
what
not going to go to Hollywood.
Because Sandy – no.
Like,
because
like
San
that's
Diego,
the last place in the world I'd
no,
want to go.
Creepsville.
Yeah. I do want to go on the celebrity tour. I want to get maps – to the stars' houses.
Get on one of those double-decker buses.
I don't even need to get on the bus. I'll just give me a map and show me where they live. I'll drive
put
around.
Scott, we'll get you one of those cameras that go around your neck. And then we pull up and we go, this is Gene Simmons' house. Ooh. Cha-ching. That's a camera noise back in the 90s. I want to go on the celebrity tour.
I want to see where the Beverly Hillbillies live. That is a house, by the way.
And it is.
I think it used to be pink. I think it's changed, but it's a thing.
Yeah, it is a real thing. Yeah.
And O.J. Simpson house got torn down.
I'm just telling you right now. I got into a real bad spot on Netflix. I'm watching that stupid Selling Sunset show.
Oh,
kiddies, don't get into that bull crap.
Is that a bad one?
Oh my gosh, it's high end real estate. Meets reality show, meets a bunch of ladies who are selling
what,
that
whatever
real
happened to Ozark? That's what I want to know.
Oh yeah, Bateman.
Jason Bateman.
That's a good series.
Like Scary I've been waiting heck, for man. 2 or 3 years for season 4.
If we do go on the celebrity tour, I might go.
And the little blonde girl with the mouth.
Yeah,
she might be the best part of the whole show.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. Hey, Sam Farnsworth from KSL 5 Television is in Las Vegas, already ready to preview some of the Utah-Oregon Pac-12 championship game goings-on down there in Vegas on the Strip. So he'll join us next. Stay right here with us. More to go. It's 97.5 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network. And already for our TV partners from KSL 5 Television and Sports Beat, Sam Farnsworth is covering everything for KSL 5 down there in Las Vegas. He's already there for that Pac-12 championship game. Sam, what's going on, man?
What's going on, Alex?
Yeah, we just haven't talked to you in a while. We're excited about jumping on here with you, man. So,
missed you guys.
Miss you too, Sam.
Look at that.
So, Sam, what's the vibe like in Las Vegas? Does it feel like there are Utah fans in town? What's going on?
Well, there certainly are. We just arrived, but I have seen multiple, just our drive all the way down, multiple people, you know, with Utah flags on the windows, you know, we've had people flash the U to us with their hands driving by. In fact, there's an exit, I think it's, you know, somewhere around the Mesquite area or beyond it towards California. There's an exit called the Ute exit, and someone put a big red a big red U over the U on the on the street sign. So
we call that
Utah line.
We call that vandalism, Sam. You got to report that immediately.
But not in Nevada. It's not vandalism.
Well, that's on the Arizona side of things too. So and you know what? Utah can do it though. They own the state of Arizona this year. So why not be able to do that? So you guys headed down there. I know you and is Matty Glade down there with you shooting everything for us as well?
Yeah, that's right. Matt Glade's with us as well. Without him, I would be lost. So.
Well, and Matt's a Utah State grad, and he's a guy that he's going to have his eyeballs firmly planted on that Utah State game this weekend as well. So let's get to this Utah and Oregon game first. What on earth has to happen for the Utes to be able to repeat what happened here in Salt Lake City? I don't know if a 38-7 game could be the same type of outcome, although I wouldn't put it past Kyle Whittingham getting his guys up for a game like this. But where do you see this one going on Friday for the championship game?
Well, I mean, they're going to have to come out just as physical, if not even more so than last, because Oregon's going to be ready for it, right? Utah dominated the line of scrimmage the first time these two teams met. They need to do it again, and that's the cliche answer. You know, whoever wins the line of scrimmage wins the game, and I know, Scott, you've talked about that in the past, that that's really where everything happens in a football game, is at the line of scrimmage. But that's so true. You know, Utah's offense you've got to have that good offensive line play so you can get a guy like Tavion Thomas. You know, he just needs a little bit of space because he, with his size and strength, he can hit those holes with a lot of momentum behind him, and it's not going to be easy to take him down on the first contact. So it begins there with the run game. I think tight ends offensively is going to play a big role as well. On the other side of the ball, again, we're talking in the trenches, but I think this is kind of – I know there's still a bowl game to be played, but I think this is kind of the Devin Lloyd game, in my opinion. This is his, I don't know if you want to call it a swan song or whatever, but this is where he is. I just got a feeling that this is, he's going to play big. It's the big stage. Really, you know, one of the last times he's going to be wearing the Utah uniform and big opportunity for him. And so, but I guess those are the kind of key areas that I'm looking at. Offensively from the run game and defensively, Devin Lloyd's going to wear how he does. Oh, darn it.
You know,
did you guys get pulled over?
Yeah, we're getting pulled over right now.
No, you're not.
That's
oh, my goodness.
Serious.
Sam, are you being serious?
You're in a company vehicle, Sam.
We are literally outside of Allegiant Stadium.
Oh. So. And so you just got pulled over outside of Allegiant Stadium. Will you leave the phone on so we can hear
what
the officer
What in the world would
something?
You get pulled over for, if I may
Are you
ask.
Driving and talking at the same time?
That must be it, guys.
Oh, boy. You leave this phone on right now so we can hear what's going on. You leave the phone on right now when the guy comes up to the... What are you talking about? This is breaking news here. Now, there goes Sam. All right, there you go. Sam Farns has been pulled over in Las Vegas as we speak in the KSL sports truck.
Turn the speaker on so we can hear.
We gotta hear what's going on here. Oh my goodness! Pass the phone to Matt so we can get a play-by-play. What's going on here? Oh boys, there it is.
He threw out the Utah thing.
Do we?
We work for KSL in Salt Lake.
Here's my question. Hang up on Sam for just 1 second. Here's my real question.
Oh my goodness.
Here's my real question. Oh, you put them on hold. That's very nice of you. We're here for the. Why do you have to turn the sirens on if you're a police officer in Vegas? Come on, Metro Police.
Well, how do you know if you're being pulled over if you don't? The siren doesn't come on.
I guess maybe if he's going for
give him the
Scott, how many times when you've been pulled over though? Usually the siren doesn't get turned on. They just flip those lights on and you know what's going
on. Oh, you're talking about the sound.
You heard it. Whenever I hear a siren go by somebody, I think to myself, oh, well, you're not getting pulled over. That's just you're in the city, man.
Well, maybe it's that, like, Las Vegas is full of lights.
Yeah.
Like, they might think that's just, you know, par for the course.
Don't put them on hold. Jeremy, hang up, and then we're going to call. He's hung up. Okay, that's good. I will say, though, I'm shocked at the at the irresponsibility of Sam Farnsworth driving and talking on the cell phone at the same time.
How do you get pulled over? I mean, what do you get pulled over for?
I'm sure that if they were right outside Allegiant Stadium, I could see them being like, you're not supposed to be here, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Parking's for ESPN only. Is one of you guys
maybe it's an Oregon fan and they saw
you're from Salt Lake City, huh? Which one of you is Scott Mitchell? That's what I thought. Up against the truck.
Yeah. Spread them.
Oh, my gosh. So, you know what my favorite part about this is? Is that our boss, Nate? I really hope he's tuned in. I really hope Nate's tuning in because he is going to get – because I'll tell you what's going to happen. He's going to get this ticket in his in the old inbox. In Vegas, it's illegal to be on your phone while you're driving. You can't wait. Hold on. But but here's the thing is that I've been in that sports truck. You can connect. It's got all the connectivity that it does.
You have to hook up your Bluetooth, though.
I know, but you can just hook straight in on the old Apple Play.
Not everyone is tech savvy.
Sam is. So is Matt.
Yeah, I don't know about
disappointed in maybe this Matt, TV but... crew. I've had this happen. I've gotten pulled over in a company car before. But that one is egregious. One is egregious because it is the sports truck, the KSLSports.com truck is inappropriately giant and red and black and white, and it's got the full KSLSports.com on it.
Let me tell you how to get out of a ticket.
Okay.
I've gotten out of
playing
tickets.
The NFL for 12 years.
No,
and,
that doesn't necessarily work. It's called like fumbling around in complete like.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. Just
unapologetically sorry for what you're doing. Here's how I know this.
I used
to debate with the cop.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you
know why I pulled you over? I'm sure you're going to tell me though.
Right, right. And it's like there's no way because there was a guy in front of me and he's going. How could you get me over here?
Yeah, I'm just following the rabbit here. That guy's going 90. I'm going 87.
And it never works. So don't try to debate.
So the best thing to do is to just act like that this is your first time driving.
Like
you're so
nervous and you're just like I can't. Like you fumble around. I'm just telling you, I did this twice and it worked both times. Like I was trying to find my proof of insurance. And you stumble through your glove box because there's all these papers. You got to have papers.
How is that going to work? They actually want to see it.
Well, I know, but if you and I go, I think I might have it on my phone.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
You try all these different things. You just kind of, and just like, you know, I'm kind of new to the area here. I'm just trying to figure all this stuff out.
You're new to the area, Mr. Mitchell. This is your address right in front of this house.
Why not just move there, though?
I'm new here, you know.
I had one experience, and I had just moved here. I still had Florida license plates, and I went across the double white line in the commuter lane, and I got pulled over for it. And the guy goes, "You got Florida plates. How long you been in Utah?" And I said, "Like a couple of weeks," and it had been a couple of months.
It'd have been like 2 years.
And he goes, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" I said, "I really don't. I have no idea."
You knew, though.
And he goes, you know that you can't cross the double white line." And I said, "No." I said, "Really?" I said, "I my parents live in Arizona, and you can go into the commuter lane as long as it's not a certain time of the day."
See, Washington's the same thing.
Same thing in Florida where
I live. There's no double white line in Washington. So in the Seattle area, you can go in and out of the HOV lane.
Do you want to know why he gave me a ticket?
Because he knew you were lying because you're Scott Mitchell and you're from Utah?
No, he goes, you know, of all the laws we have, it's one of the few that we actually write out.
Yeah, it's
on the sign.
It's on the signs.
And the sign was like right in front of me.
Oh, so you parked in front of the
I
sign.
I had parked in front of the sign.
Yeah, that'll get you.
And he says, it's something you should just notice.
That's my favorite is when you do the, do you know how fast you're going? Must be 74. You know what the speed limit is here, though? I mean, 70, right? And then he's like, "You're parked in front of the 55-mile-an-hour right. work zone.
Yeah,
you're in trouble." So, breaking news, Sam Farnsworth from KSL5 Television.
Won't be covering the game. He'll be in jail.
Is this an episode of Cops? Maybe the Metro Police in Vegas have got it figured out?
It's got to be a slow night.
Have you called him back yet?
Hey, It's got to be a slow night in Las Vegas. Is Sam Farnsworth getting pulled over in front of
Allegiant Stadium?
And they know the Pac-12 championship game. It says KSL Sports.
My favorite part is when he goes, oh, we're actually from Utah. That's not going to work either, bub. Step out of the vehicle.
See, Sam can fake nervous but do it authentically.
Why do you have a – he's like, why do you have a – why do you – oh, my gosh. He says – he wants to know if he can come back on and explain what happened. We're giving him a call right now. See? We follow up. We got to follow up. This is a sports news program first. And so when the KSL sports truck gets pulled over in Vegas while we're on the horn with him, we at least have to give him his ability to be able to explain himself. So we'll get Sam Farnsworth on the horn here from Las Vegas. Scott, any other tips on how people can get out of tickets?
Yeah. I got another one.
I actually
asked a highway patrolman about this one.
I'll just tell you right now who the worst municipality is with police pulling over.
Oh, I'll give you a couple.
It won't help you. It won't help your view of these people already. Spanish Fork Police Department. 1,000%. Main Street, 30 miles an hour. Yeah. They can stuff it. Hey, Sam Farnsworth back on the horn here with us. Are you driving and
talking? Are you going to jail, Sam? Or
are you in the back of a vehicle?
Out or what?
What's going on here? What happened?
I'm going up to pick up my credential now. I'm walking now.
Look at you.
No, we're good.
Will you pick mine up too while you're there?
What happened?
So there's a no right turn on red almost everywhere here in Nevada, I guess. Oh, so that's what he was telling. He's like, you can't turn right on red, and I was like, nah, I didn't see that.
And then he
was like, and you're supposed to be hands free.
Uh-oh.
And normally I am in my own vehicle, but my phone wasn't connected to the – anyway.
Oh, you're not tech savvy enough to hook it up in the company vehicle?
Put it on the – all you have to do is get the aux cord and plug it in, Sam. You got Apple Play in the truck. Come on, man.
Matt's phone was connected. We were listening to a podcast on his phone.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
I'd have given you a ticket, too.
Everything's good. He was really cool. He was like, I just thought I'd let you know. And he let us go.
Oh,
he let us go.
Look at that. Well, congratulations. You don't have to give your ticket to our boss, Nate. So first time on the show. First time on the show someone's been pulled over live while we were interviewing them. So congratulations.
No kidding.
It's a first for our program. So there you go. Now, did you start crying? Did you turn the waterworks on? We didn't hear any of that.
I did. It's because it was silent. It was a broken heart.
Well, there you go. All right. Yeah. Sam, you got 3.5 minutes then to explain to us how the Utes are going to win this this game on a Friday night for the Pac-12 championship game. Go.
Okay, so I'm going back again to offensively Tavian Thomas. I mean, he's the bell cow. He's been outstanding all season. And again, he's the type of back, and we've seen the depth they have at that position, right? Whether it's TJ Pledger or Mekhi Bernard, but Tavion is the what is he like? 18 touchdowns. I feel like it's happened all in the last 5 games or something. but with the way the offensive line has played more recently, especially, they've been dominant. Tavion Thomas has been dominant. I just have a hard time seeing. I know Oregon will make adjustments. It won't come as easily as it did last time, but I have a hard time seeing them being able to just flat out stop the Utah run game that they've been so good at these last couple of weeks. So that's where it begins for me, is in the trenches and in the run game on offense.
Does Anthony Brown Jr. adjust his game enough? I mean, he had such a bad game against. I mean, Utah made everybody look bad in that game, but Anthony Brown Jr. was never comfortable in that game. What does he have to change up in his game? Does he have the ability to be able to beat this Utes team if he puts a game together?
Yeah, sure. He's certainly talented enough. This Oregon team, there's a reason why they were ranked as high as they were for as long as they were this season, because they're thought highly of, but also because they've proven it on the football field. Utah just dominated that game so much. Thank you. Sorry, picking up the credential. I know this has been like the most distracted phone call interview you guys have ever had. Probably.
It's a hot mess.
I apologize. I apologize.
Oh my
hopefully good entertainment for you, though.
It's good. Look, when you got pulled over, it made my day.
Oh my goodness! So it didn't make mine for a second there, because you know, and then I'm thinking, okay, great, everyone back in Salt Lake City is just, you know, going to have a heyday with this,
hey,
I guess, right?
And we did, we have,
we did,
and we will. And we will. So, Sam, we appreciate it. Stay safe down there. And, I don't know, stay away from the Metro Police for 5 minutes, would you?
I'm gonna be a good boy.
No turn on red,
don't
Sam.
Don't turn on red. Especially if the arrow's
no right
there.
Turn on red.
Jeez.
You hear that?
My heavens.
Share that with all your listeners driving
down.
Hey,
if you're driving
there,
down to Vegas, all you Ute fans who are down there, most of the red lights down there in Las Vegas, especially near the Strip, no turn on red. So there you go. That's public service announcement for the day. Sam Farnsworth, everybody from KSL5 Television. We'll talk to you again, Sam.
All right, thanks, guys.
There you go, Sam Farnsworth. Anytime anybody joins us on the horn, like Sam just did, they're on the Smart Rain guest line. Smart Rain state-of-the-art smart irrigation control helps with first-class water management. So if you want to learn how to save 30 to 50% on your commercial property's water costs, give them, look them up. Look at them. See what Smart Rain can do for you. Go to smartrain.net for more information. We'll take the break here. We've got more to go right here. It's Unrivaled. It's the day before the Pac-12 championship game. We've got so much more to get into. We've got our NFL roundup, your two-minute drill. You don't want to miss any of it. Stay right here with us. It's Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
Time to welcome in Nick Ford, University of Utah offensive lineman.
It's interesting that you get Oregon. Obviously, you got...
Here we go.
Go get it. Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the Unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium Grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback.
What is that?
And, the other guy on 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back. It is the NFL Roundup right here on 97.5 1280 The Zone. It's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, former NFL quarterback. Myself, Alex Keery. Thanks for being with us. NFL Roundup brought to you by LHM Used Car Supermarket. Over 1,000 used vehicles in inventory. Shop online, LHMUsedCars.com. Big news, of course, today that was not even really football-related at all, though it affects the Tampa Bay Buccaneers football. Antonio Brown has been suspended now for 3 games. Remember when we were talking about the chef who called him out saying that his vaccine cards were fake?
Right.
And initially the Buccaneers said, oh, yeah, right. No, it's not a big deal. They're not fake. Come on. Antonio Brown was using fake vaccine cards to get by the NFL's protocols, and he's been now suspended for 3 games. Why does he get a 3-game suspension and Aaron Rodgers gets
really
hangs out?
Do I have to explain this to you?
Yes, you do.
Because it's Aaron Rodgers.
What are you talking about?
You don't suspend Aaron Rodgers. Aaron, that was a bad thing to do.
They suspended Tom Brady for deflated the old footballs. That was Tom Brady. He's the GOAT, man.
That's after they won about 5 or 6 Super Bowls.
So
it's got to try.
But that's exactly when. But that's exactly when you don't touch a guy for deflating the footballs. Suspending Antonio Brown for 3 games for the fake vaccine card versus lying to everybody. I mean, it's the same thing. You're lying to people saying that you got the vaccine.
Yeah, but Tom Brady or not Tom, Aaron Rodgers was kind of saying, "Look, I did other things that I thought
was,
were
also I was inoculated somehow,
and he's allergic to some of the
All right. So Antonio Brown, it turns out he was indeed faking the vaccine cards.
Like that's supposed to shock us or something.
He cannot be the only one. Yeah. Do you think this is a? I don't know if it's a widespread NFL practice, but certainly other guys have looked into it, right?
I guess
on the same day that LeBron
get the shots. Who cares?
On the same day that
LeBron, it's not a big deal. It's like, gosh.
On the same day that LeBron,
everyone's got to be too smart.
Retested and got a couple of negative tests because apparently his first test was considered a false positive. On that same day, you got Antonio Brown, who's been faking the vaccine cards, and so he's going to get suspended for 3 games. There you go. So Antonio Brown out for the next 3 games for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't know. I mean, that's a...
I think it's amazing that you have all of this talent. You're so good. And yet, it's just a train wreck. Somehow, you're going to do something so bizarre and
Antonio
so out
Brown,
there and such a problem.
Antonio Brown gave us like 5 good episodes on HBO's Hard Knocks. Yeah. That's all he was good for. Oh, Antonio Brown's clean. He's cleared. He just cleared the air, by the way, on Twitter. He is vaccinated now.
That's good.
Okay. But apparently he was misrepresenting his COVID-19 vaccine status. See, that's the thing. Like, any place that – I'm trying to think of places that the Pac-12 Media Days, they had us show our vaccine cards.
Yeah.
I don't know how much they looked at them. We had to send the pictures of them. I didn't hear anything else of it.
Yeah.
Mine is in my wallet, and it's been through the wash once.
I had to show a vaccination to Pac-12 Championship.
Oh, to go this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think anybody going has to show the it's the Pac-12's kind of the deal. Yeah. On top of the fact that Allegiant Stadium has its own stuff as well. Allegiant Stadium is they're pretty strict on it. If it's for the NFL games, if it's for the Raiders games, I think you do have to show proof of vaccination to go to those Raiders games. Yeah. All right, so there you go, Antonio Brown.
Jazz, you got to show them for the Jazz game.
Got to show them for the Jazz game as well. Or a negative test. Next up on the old NFL roundup here, Scott. Speaking of the GOAT, Tom Brady. This is the weirdest story I've
seen. I love this
day.
Story. I think it's the coolest story out there. It's amazing.
So there's a Michigan high school basketball team, all right?
Ninth grade freshman team.
Yeah. Their coach encouraged them, hey, why don't you guys figure out how to get together during on the weekends and stuff like that. If somebody on your team needs a ride or something like that, get a group text going. They got a group text going among their whole freshman basketball team.
14 players.
14 of those players put their numbers in to this phone, but the 15th one on the list was one digit off. That phone number was texted to this whole group of ninth grade players on this freshman team. And boy, when you see the picture of these guys, they look every bit of ninth grade. They got the braces. They got the floofy hair. They got the beanies. They got the fresh faces, right? And so
it ended up in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers locker room.
It ended up in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
One digit off.
Locker room, yes. Okay? And the best part about all this is because they're sitting there, and while they're on this group text, they send it out, and they're like, and this person was like, "Hey, you got yourself the wrong number here." Well, it was Buccaneers cornerback Sean Murphy Bunting, who's from Michigan. I think went to Central Michigan. Was one digit off of that Michigan area code because that's where he's from. That one digit got to Sean Murphy Bunting, who was in the locker room. He's like, "I play for the Buccaneers." They're like, "Yeah, right." He texts a picture of himself in front of his locker to prove it. Buccaneers gear, all sorts of stuff. His number is on there, everything.
And they still don't believe him.
So then he goes, and then they're like, oh, okay. So Sean Bunting, instead of just ignoring the whole thing, he just walks through the locker room.
Does the FaceTime.
Who pops up on the FaceTime, Scott?
Well, it started with Gronkowski and Mike Evans.
Rob Gronkowski, Mike
Leonard
Evans.
Fournette.
Leonard Fournette shows up, and then these boys get greedy. Right?
Right.
That's the best part. They get greedy and they say, show us the GOAT.
Yeah.
Give us Tom Brady and then we'll believe that this is real. And he said, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where Tom is. You know, he kind of does his own thing. He's, you know. And then suddenly, on the FaceTime, Tom Brady pops up and goes, "Sup, fellas?" And they lose their absolute crap. I mean, it was the FaceTime wrong number of a lifetime. I get the wrong number, Scott, and I got somebody hitting me up for, you know,
right.
My car's warranty or something.
Yeah.
All right?
One digit off
of you texting your friend and you get the Buccaneers locker room.
How cool is that?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I've had my cell phone number since I moved here to Utah to go to BYU. So 2002. I've had the same cell phone number since 2002.
Okay.
And I get a call every month for Wayne. Every month of my entire life. Hey, is Wayne there? And it's not good people looking for Wayne, by the way. It's like they tell me I have to prove that I'm not Wayne to these guys because it's sometimes a law enforcement
situation.
To get on
Facebook?
Yeah, I get on FaceTime and go, here's my kids, here's me.
No, but I've gotten a couple weird phone calls about Wayne. Wayne, you're in trouble, dude. Call Utah County Sheriff's Office, man. Wow. Wayne is in huge trouble. And the best part is they're like, who are you then? And I'm like, I don't like this conversation. I don't like Utah. I don't want to talk to you. But Tom Brady getting on your kid's FaceTime is about as good as it's going to get.
I wonder if they kept him on there. You know, if he just stayed on it.
He could listen. People can't get ones. They can't get a high five as he walks by them to the locker room half the time, right?
Well, I don't know about that.
No, I'm just saying, like, not everybody, even if you're standing in proximity to him. Because, you know, there's always that thing where guys will run in the locker room and they'll high-five guys on the way in.
Yeah.
And there's always, like, two or three toward the end when they don't get it because that player kind of gives up and just goes in the locker room. These guys got to peek inside the Tampa Bay Buccaneer locker room.
I think that's the coolest thing in the world. And Tom Brady went to Michigan. So he's,
well, yeah. I mean, what do you say to these kids, though? He said, "What's up, fellas?" You're the guy who gets the random FaceTime call.
I don't know what you say to him.
Hey, eat your vegetables, kids.
How's it going?
Go to tb12.com and see my eating plan. Right? That's what he'd do. All right. Next up on the old NFL roundup here, Scott. Speaking of Aaron Rodgers, he suggested that the Packers coaches are talking about his are talking too much about his hurt toe. About his broken toe.
They're sabotaging.
Why would they do that? Haven't they learned their lesson, Scott? I don't know where these reports are coming from, Rodgers says. I don't know who's talking. Seems like there are certain coaches who may have friends in the media, and they don't realize that they're just actually trying to report on these things. There are guys for a while who want to know this kind of stuff, and they're leaking this stuff too. Somebody inside the organization trying to sabotage Aaron Rodgers? Why would somebody do that? He says this kind of garbage. He has said it before that it's this narrative that Aaron Rodgers has enemies inside the organization, which I don't doubt. I can't imagine you being at this place, and Aaron Rodgers rubs a lot of people the wrong way.
Why is it that, like, you have all these other teams? You have 31 other teams.
Yep.
You have 31 other starting quarterbacks in the NFL. You have a lot of really good players, a lot of really good starting quarterbacks in the NFL. Why is it that the only guy in the world with drama is Aaron Rodgers?
He's the only guy.
He's the only guy that's, like, unhappy.
Antonio Brown, they're the only ones that people are after, right?
Yeah, it's like, what is it? You know, is it your personality? Is it that you're bored? Is it that you just, you know, is there something really wrong with you? Because no one else has these problems. No one has these problems. Like the whole world is out to get you kind of thing. It's nonsense. It's nonsense that people who are in the Green Bay Packers organization, who their livelihood depends on Aaron Rodgers doing well.
And if they win a Super Bowl.
And you want to put your hands in Aaron Rodgers' whatever his name is, put your trust in his hands, because he's good. He's really good, but he's always got something wrong. It's like he's just something to complain about. Something just isn't right, and something is, and there's no grace in him. You know, it's like there's no gratitude, there's no appreciation for how amazing what he's doing and where he is. It's just like there has to be more, and I can never get enough, and people are always, you know, wrong or wronging me, or I just don't get it.
Maybe he's making it easier on himself. You always talk about how these great quarterbacks and these great players, you know, your Michael Jordans, your Tom Brady's, they have to sort of invent this chip on their shoulder, because at some point you're the best and you have to keep reinventing that thing of, oh, I'm getting looked. They're coming after me, man. And I have people who aren't in my corner, and I've got enemies, and people doubt me, and blah blah blah. And sometimes you have to manufacture it. Maybe Aaron Rodgers is cutting corners and just actually making enemies, and people are against him, and then he just goes, good. Then I don't have to manufacture it. I'm gonna prove actual people wrong, even people as I will make up inside my organization. There's not one person. I think of organizations that are more in love with the romanticism of that place, and there's no better place than Green Bay, right? The people who work there, they have a love for that organization and the desire to win more than any other franchise.
Have you ever been to Green Bay?
No.
Yeah. I mean, Lambeau Field's cool.
But maybe that actually is more of why those people love their team more, right?
I guess.
They're obsessed.
Yeah.
I'm saying that there's no people who work for that team want to win the Super Bowl maybe more than any other organization because they always – it's the Green Bay Packers. It's the ultimate, it's the ultimate little guy. Small market, old team.
It's the true fan.
That's what I'm saying. There's no way. Why would he – he comes up with this stuff to – it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to me. And then finally here on our NFL Roundup as we wrap things up on it, TV executives apparently who've been polled would prefer the Buccaneers versus the Patriots for your Super Bowl matchup for the best version of people tuning in for that game. Is that the best game, Scott, to be able to get? Is that the best matchup that you can get for people to be able to tune the old eyeballs
New England?
To a football game?
No.
I don't think so either.
No.
I think Tom Brady is always a win. I think the Buccaneers
are probably
a win,
yeah.
For sure. I don't think
because you always have Gronkowski
team.
Too, and he's good for some.
There's no, yeah, yeah. There's no. Look, that's not a true rivalry. Don't act like. No. Don't try to invent this Tom Brady versus Bill Belichick
thing
again.
It's about markets, you know. It's about that.
Yeah, Boston's a big market. That's that whole East Coast is a big market.
Yeah, and Belichick.
What would be the actual best matchup?
Best
in
matchup
terms of like great football game between the best two teams. Tampa Bay could be right there. They're in that mix.
I mean. You know, Buffalo could end up being one of those teams. I thought the Rams were.
We used to think the Titans, and now we don't.
What I found interesting about the Rams, as soon as they got OBJ and as soon as they got Von Miller.
They got worse.
They got bad. And there's something about that chemistry. It's just a real thing. And I don't know. And maybe they'll get it together here before the season ends. But, man, I really like the Rams.
All right, let's take another break. We'll come back. We got our 2-minute drill around the corner. You don't want to miss it. Stories that we're going to just jam here at the end of the hour here. So just hang out here with us. More to go. The 2-minute drill's next. It's Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone.
Care at University of Utah Health. We're here for you.
Your home for the best college football coverage in Utah. This is your Utes at 50 update on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Okay, it's your Utes at 50 update right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Kyle Whittingham discusses the moment that turned this whole season around for his team.
Cam, who had just taken over because he didn't get inserted initially until the end of game 3. Offensive line started playing much better, started utilizing the tight ends more, and just executed better overall. Tavion Thomas, the emergence of Tavion Thomas, I shouldn't leave him out because he's obviously been a huge factor for us.
More to go. 2-minute drill right around the corner as we get you going on more Unrivaled right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
College football coverage in Utah is right here on the Zone Sports Network.
Let's go! Hurry up!
The Pac-12 championship game is finally here, and the Utes look to earn their first ever Pac-12 title and a trip to the Rose Bowl as they battle Oregon in Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas this Friday.
Tut!
You're listening to Unrivaled with Alex Keery and Scott Mitchell on 97.5 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
All right, welcome back. It is 97.5 1280 The Zone. Unrivaled here. Some Aerosmith bringing you back to the program. Aerosmith, the house band of the day, brought to you by Live Nation. Ooh, man, that sounds so good. Okay. Well, it sounded good for a minute.
What?
Let me hear you hit that high note, Scott. Hey, you got pretty good, man. Hey, leave it for the drive down to Vegas. You sound like everybody's dad humming along in the car right now.
Oh, I don't.
Oh, my goodness. All right. House Band of the Day brought to you by Live Nation. All your concert information, ticket info, additional artist information as well, go to livenation.com. It's that time of the show, of course, where we get to some of the stories we wish we'd have gotten to for the rest of the program. But so we'll just kind of shoehorn them in here. So, Scott, what is a two-minute drill since you've played in one?
Well, late in a football game, we got to go down the field, kick a field goal, score a touchdown. Don't have a lot of time, so you got to hurry. Our show's the same way. Still got a lot to talk about, but not a lot of time, so we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show, go home happy with the trophy, because everyone gets a trophy, two COVID shots, and a whole bunch of desserts. I think we're going to add Little Debbie snack cakes.
If we're going to talk about, I think you've used the word plethora before of desserts. The plethora of desserts. There's no bigger plethora of desserts than at, like, the Bellagio buffet.
Oh, never been there. I'm not a Vegas person.
I'm not either.
I just don't.
I'm not either, but I've at least been to a Vegas buffet that was worth going to.
Oh, no, I've been to some.
You've been to some?
Oh, yes.
But can you believe the amounts of desserts that they put at those things?
No, it's the. Well, we've been to the Chinese one.
Oh, you and I went to Ping Pang Pong, yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Very authentic.
Like, we couldn't even order. Yeah. We had to point at stuff.
Yeah.
It was beyond authentic. Now, I will say this. That was underwhelming because we were eating like...
Massively.
We were eating like gelatin pig's feet. There's a sushi place.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember what it's called, but it's incredible.
They have sushi,
but they have other things.
I don't know what the best buffet is in Vegas because I've only been to maybe a couple. And it's not really my thing because I get full after 2 seconds. I can't last, and I have too much pride to me. I have too much pride to hang out.
See, I can eat a lot.
I know, and you hang out too.
I like the buffet.
I have a former coworker who we went to a Vegas buffet for the West Coast Conference tournament. We went to the World Buffet at the Bellagio, and he ate so many crab's legs that when they hauled them away, people clapped around us.
No.
Yes.
Now, see, I could do that.
I know. And his whole thing was, if I'm going to pay $48 or $55 or whatever it was for this buffet, I'm going to get the thing that is going to cost the most money that I wouldn't get necessarily at the restaurant all the time. So he was crab legs. He was King Crab Legs.
My oldest daughter lives in Charleston, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to places back there, all you can eat crab legs.
Wow.
I don't know that I've ever seen an individual eat more and like prolifically as my daughter.
Oh, really?
Oh, she's amazing.
Oh.
Amazing.
See, now, I've been at some meals with former Scott Mitchell, the 127 pounds ago Scott Mitchell. I've been to meals. And you can put it down. See, this is why it's hard to talk about these buffets. Again.
There is good food in Las Vegas.
Yeah, there is. Scott, you explained the two-minute drill, so let's go ahead and get into
some of these. Okay, let's do it.
Notre Dame hires from within. They're promoting their defensive coordinator, Marcus Freeman, it looks like. I don't know if that's – does that feel a little bit like they weren't going for the moon on that one?
Yeah, and you don't have time to really go through a coaching search and do everything.
Yeah,
and probably all the top candidates are gone, unless you do what I said yesterday, and that's like poach someone from somewhere. And probably the greatest chance of stability you're going to have is to do it from within and the least disruption to your program. So it's probably the smartest, best move. I don't know too much about it.
Do you want me to make you feel young with Marcus Freeman's or make you feel old with Marcus Freeman's hiring? He graduated from high school in 2005.
Really?
He's 35 years old.
And he's the head coach
at
Notre Dame.
He just turned 35 and he's the head coach at Notre Dame.
Jim Fossil was the head coach at Utah. He was 35.
I am continually amazed by guys who are young.
Yeah.
Like this. But Marcus Freeman, congratulations. Former defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. You are now head of the class. There you go. Next up on the old two-minute drill here. You saw Nebraska's quarterback, Martinez, hit the transfer portal.
Yes, he did.
When you hit the transfer portal and your stock isn't necessarily rising, there are guys who will hang out in the transfer portal, Scott, and people are not going to be calling. Yeah. And I feel like that's one of those guys who's underperformed a lot. And Scott Frost has underperformed a ton at Nebraska. I'm kind of sad because I want to see a program like Nebraska always be good, and they have not been good for a long time.
But you eventually someone like that, someone needs a guy. You look at Utah a year ago when Cam Rising was injured and Jake Bentley left, and there was no one in the program. There was a kid in high school that came, you know, but no one. And so finding, you know, when you're kind of in a desperate situation, there's enough programs out there where you'll find guys or find a spot, I think. I love the transfer portal. I think it's amazing.
I think it's really cool.
I'm really disappointed in Bronco and his position on it because I think it's fair and equitable to a lot of players.
The San Diego Union Tribune reporting that there is some possible COVID concerns for the San Diego State Aztecs going into its Mountain West title game. All good news for Utah State, right? Don't know exactly who's going to not be there. One San Diego State tight end test positive. The team's still looking to start. Jordan Brookshire is their quarterback on Saturday. But, man, Aztecs don't know exactly what positions are going to be affected, but they do know multiple sources have said at least one of the team's tight ends has tested positive for COVID. They're worried that others will, too.
It's hard. That's hard developing. This time of year, but everyone has injuries. Everyone has issues. Not necessarily COVID, but it's the team that just has the least amount of attrition at the end of the year sometimes. It's the team that wins. Maybe it's not the best team.
Strike while the iron's hot, though. Yeah.
No.
You got to win.
No one
in
Utah State's going to go, oh, we're really sorry that you had guys out because of COVID.
I know.
They don't care.
Win the Pac-12 while USC still is down. Win the Mountain West Conference when San Diego State doesn't have enough guys because of COVID.
It's a great strategy.
Boom. Let's do it. All right. More to go right here. Stay with us. It's Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone.
This is Hanson Scotty.
Let's do it.
Fresh off a upset victory over BYU, in which UVU got these.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.